I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie and Mark.
This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009, and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Tokyo Noah. You're listening to the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
You hungry?
Hey, Ma! We get some meatloaf!
Think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
You clap for the killers.
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off that.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just living the dream.
Hi, I'm Bill White, and welcome to Chicago Bulldog.
I gotta be honest, I come in like a little like I'm trying to get my bearings with cartoons or Muhammad. It's like, you still got it.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I got a special episode today covering two teams, the Miami Heat and the Golden State Warriors. Two teams with very interesting off seasons. The Heat losing, obviously, Dwayne Wade for the beloved Bulls coming into Chicago. And Golden State with, you know, probably one of the most interesting off seasons of all time. A contender, a great team, adding a superstar like Kevin Durant. So I have actually met Miami Heat expert Alex Stanchoff from Miami. He's been on the show before, joining us in, to discuss several things, the departure of Dwayne Wade, what was a bigger shock, losing LeBron or losing Wade, Wade's game today overview, Whiteside and the Heat going forward, the future of Chris Bosh, a number of interesting topics around the Miami Heat. And then we go to the ultimate Warrior fan, Dario A., and Dario discusses Durant signing, the situation with the Oracle Arena, and new arena that's being built in San Francisco, the firing of Mark Jackson, the hiring of Steve Kerr from a Warrior fan perspective, and the current Warrior departures this offseason. Obviously, adding Durant has led to the departures of several key players. Enjoyed talking with both these guys a lot. I'm blessed for my job that I travel quite a bit, so it's always good to, you know, meet some contacts in these cities. To meet contacts in these NBA cities who have a passion about NBA basketball like I do for their respective teams. So it's always fun to chat about the NBA in general and those teams and learn more about the league. Before we get started, though, I did want to address the one rumor, the Blake Griffin rumor. And you might recall right at the trade deadline, I brought up this exact point that at the time, the LA Clippers were playing extremely well without Blake, who broke his hand punching out, you know, a member of the organization. We all know that story. And I thought that it would be a good idea to reach out to them with Blake going into the last year of his deal. It might be a good idea to reach out and suggest a trade like the one I had mentioned on ESPN 1000. Taj Gibson and Nico for Blake Griffin. Obviously, we'd probably have to include some additional assets in that deal to make that deal go through. But just by looking at how LA has performed in the playoffs the last few years, how they've generally disappointed, I think LA, the Clippers, might be up for one such move. I'm all for making this happen. If you do the math, Blake Griffin, Butler, Wade, Rondo, Lopez at center, that's as formidable of a starting lineup as you're going to see in the league. You know, still probably a tad behind Golden State. I think we could compete against Cleveland with that lineup. Blake Griffin is an incredible athlete. He'd add to the athleticism that we're sorely lacking. I love Taj, but he's on the other side of 30, and he's obviously on his way down as a basketball player. Blake is still pretty young, I think 28 years old, ascending. Nico, another fine player, but he doesn't have anywhere near the athleticism that Blake Griffin does. So I think that would be a tremendous addition to the beloved Bull. If they can make that happen. Again, the only reason I'm bringing it up because several people have brought it up to me on Twitter. I have not found one substantiated rumor that this is true from a respected site, like ESPN.com. So, you know, I have seen it on a lot of websites that are, you know, frankly not reputable, but, you know, who knows? I think it's definitely worth a conversation from both teams' perspective. So we'll see what happens. But who knows? I mean, before this offseason, did anyone expect Dwayne Wade to end up on the Bulls? Heck no. So you never know. Anything is possible in today's NBA. So All the best to you guys. Follow me on Twitter at CBEFred, CBEFred. Email the show at ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. Again, I hope you enjoy it. Here's the interview with Miami Heat expert Al Stanchoff, and then following that, the interview with Dario, the Ultimate Warrior fan.
Alex Stanchoff, really appreciate you joining us, Miami Heat expert. You've been on the Bullseye before. Really excited to have you on again, especially in these times of turbulence for the beloved Heat, for your beloved Heat, and the beloved Bull. So excitement for the beloved Bull. Let's get into it right away. Your reaction to the news yesterday, I'd like you to maybe give me a step-by-step process of hearing the awful news it must have been for you that Dwayne Wade is now a Chicago Bull.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, there was shock. I think everyone felt shocked, but the step-by-step was very similar to last year, where there was some rumbling and some noise in the sort of on Twitter and on the blogs and on sports talk and among people that, you know, negotiations were ongoing and getting a little tense. And look, I just felt like it was sort of two different business, you know, organizations negotiating a deal, and I didn't make a whole lot of it. And I never thought Dwayne would actually go anywhere because he's made, you know, no indication that he ever wanted to leave. And the same for the Heat. They made it clear they wanted to reward him sort of for his loyalty. So I felt like it was just gamesmanship and that they would come to an agreement and it was sort of a fait accompli that Dwayne was coming back. Then I started hearing, like, late afternoon drive time sports radio. They were like, guys, this is real. This is not a bluff. And I was like, that's strange. And then I started thinking more about the process. And then, and sort of when I finally heard that he had left, I was kind of prepared for it a little bit. I was still shocked, but I was kind of prepared for it because I was like, okay, what does this mean now? Now let me think about this if he doesn't come back. So I'm actually in an okay place as a Heat fan. I love the guy, but I'm still shocked.
How about the fan base in general? You got your hand on the pulse a little bit better than we do here in Chicago. How has the reaction been overall?
So, great question. I think the people who speak from the heart are hurt or angry or sad or all the emotional things. The people who actually think about this and speak from the head and use logic are almost unanimously like, well, it's too bad. This day was going to come, but it makes sense for the Heat. It's the best thing for the team, in a nutshell.
And was this a bigger shock to you than last year, LeBron leaving, or was Wade?
Oh, God, no. This is not even close to LeBron.
So you're saying LeBron
was 10 times more shocking than Dwayne.
Really?
The fans down here love Dwayne, but he's been kind of done. Not done, but kind of like a hobbled great player for a number of years now. Remember? I mean, he did not perform in the last finals we were in. And he, you know, I think if you look at the number of games he's played over the last 5 years, this season was an anomaly, 72, I think. But the prior 4 seasons was something like 40, 45, 37, 52. So it's clear we prepared ourselves that this day was going to come because his body was just breaking down. This last year was a wonderful surprise, and I hope it continues for you guys, frankly, for Dwayne's sake. But we've kind of known this day was coming. He's breaking down. And at some point, there's going to be a breakup, right?
Absolutely. Where is he at, though, now as a player? I mean, I thought from afar he had an incredible year last season. He still had seems like at a pretty high level. I think he had a 20 PER. You know, quick review over his 2016 performance and what parts of his game have faded with time.
Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to go and look at all the stats. So I'm not even going to quote numbers, but I will tell you, if you look below the surface and you look before the playoffs, because Dwayne was one of the best players in the playoffs, at least in the Eastern Conference, which I watched. I watched every minute of every game that the Heat played, and he was unbelievable this year.
Phenomenal. Yep.
He did not play at that level during the regular season, and I think his minutes per game were something like 29 or 30. So okay. he was not playing a sort of a LeBron level of minutes per game. And I even read a stat today that when he was on the floor versus when he was off the floor, and it was sort of Goran running the team, we scored more points with Goran, and our defense gave up fewer points with Goran. I'm not saying I'm a huge Goran fan. I mean, I like him, but he's not. Certainly, I would take Dwayne over Goran. But the numbers actually show that Dwayne did not have a great year. Even though we all feel like he did, you know, he didn't from a numbers perspective. And again, plus minus, I don't know. What does it mean? Dwayne is a winner, and he finds ways to win games. So
he was down to 30. You're right, 30.5 minutes per game this past season. He was in, last 4 years have been a steady decline, 34.7, 32.9, 31.8, 30.5. That's where I get, you know, I'm not as concerned about, because I feel like the Bulls do have some young players I'd like to see play. I want to see his minutes cut back significantly, where he's playing 28 minutes a game. But I still think some of the leadership qualities, and I think you could maybe comment on this, he does have those leadership qualities, right? This guy is a first-class individual who's going to help, I think, Jimmy Butler learn what it takes to be a winner.
Yeah, I without a doubt, and I've seen him mature since he got here and grow as a player and as a person, as a father, and, you know, as a member of the community, and he's first class all the way. You will hear nobody say a negative word about Dwayne Wade. He's just a phenomenal individual. So, yeah, he's a leader. He's disciplined. He knows what it takes to win. Last year he fired his trainer after I don't know how many years with the same guy, replaced him with somebody else. Entirely new fitness regimen, new dietary regimen and workout summer plan, and it made a huge difference for him. So I am optimistic that, yes, you're going to get, you know, a healthier Dwayne, but he is declining. You're going to get a great leader for sure. So even if he doesn't play that much, he will have a great influence on the team. And that's all great. For us, it's more of like the dollars and the business side of it is what, you know, didn't make sense. And again, we can get into that when you ask that question. But I have a feeling I know pretty much what happened, even though I don't have firsthand knowledge. I kind of put the pieces together.
So to that end, let's talk a little bit about the Heat going forward. First of all, touch on Whiteside. What's your 411 on him? Do you think this departure will have a negative effect on him?
I think the contract that he got is going to have a bigger negative effect than losing Wade. But I do think it will have a negative effect. I think losing Luol Deng, who, I mean, I love Luol Deng. Such a steadying influence. Amazing. Like, I wish we could have kept him. I know you guys loved him, too. That's going to have an impact. What does Udonis Haslem do? He's the next guy in line to sort of, you know, take Whiteside, you know, under his wing. I think that, you know, Alonzo Mourning has a very strong influence on this team. He's a former big man, strong personality. He works for the team. He'll help a lot. And also Juwan Howard has sort of stepped up with David Fizdale moving on. He's now, I think, you know, one of the more senior assistant coaches. So I think they're going to be okay. But, yeah, it hurts. It hurts. I think Whiteside, you know, he's you got to keep your eye on the guy. He changed so much from the first day we saw him till the end of last season. I never thought he was a max player until the last month of last season, literally. I was like, this guy, don't give him max dollars. You know, he's still too unpredictable, you know, emotional. And then he figured out how to shoot free throws. He figured out a little bit of an offensive game.
Right.
He played within the lane. You know, he stayed in his lane suddenly. And it was like, wow, if this guy can be coached that quickly, and they're saying we don't even know what his upside is, then I guess he's worth it. And boom, he gets 5 max contract offers.
Yeah, just incredible to see the transition from a guy who's basically, you know, out of the league to this. But going forward, Chris Bosh, what's the story with him?
So I'm 90% sure he's never going to play again in the league.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm even being conservative on that. I think the Heat have already sort of I think this is really a Chris Bosh story in a lot of ways, because the uncertainty, and it's a sad story, but it's a business. The uncertainty that Chris's situation has created has locked up this giant piece of their salary cap. And so they need a player to play in his spot, right? So they need an extra player, and they don't have the salary to pay him. So his health is still, they're not commenting on it down here. No one is. But all the sort of doctors who, you know, who I've spoken to or call in or I've read about all say, you can't play this guy. It's simply too dangerous. He has to be on blood thinners. Once it happens twice, which it has, the absolute standard, you know, protocol is blood thinners, once you're on blood thinners, you cannot have physical contact. If you do, your blood doesn't clot, and you can have a, you can just hit your head hard, and you can have a brain hemorrhage and die.
Oh,
so
wow.
Nobody wants that. And if he's not on blood thinners, then he can suffer another clot and die of a stroke or a heart attack. So, and again, I'm not a doctor, but it seems pretty clear cut that the Heat have now said, okay, he's never going to play again. As long as he doesn't play a game between now and January 27th of next year, he's off the team. He's automatically retired. We get the salary, whatever, back in our salary cap. And we can then go forward from there. And at that point, we have the flexibility to take advantage of the following offseason.
Yeah. How about some of the younger players on the team? What did you think of their, you know, season? Obviously, you got some really nice pieces right now. Justice Winslow. You know, well, there's obviously
Josh Richardson
isn't young, but love to hear Josh Richardson, who I really liked. Can you give a little 411 on the rest of the team and the players that you like and you think are going to be good going forward?
Yeah, so for a team that doesn't believe in the draft, the Heat hit the, I mean, they hit the lottery. They did, literally. But they hit a gold mine last year. Josh Richardson is absolutely a legitimate player. He's still raw, still has a lot of, you know, development. But at the second half of last season, he had the highest shooting percentage for three-pointers in the league. Okay?
Wow.
Including Steph Curry, yes. So, it was unbelievable. I don't know if it was just a 3 or 4 month thing. I have no idea if it's going to continue. But he seems like a really cool cat. He's very mature for his age. Same with Justice Winslow. He's just a physical specimen. Teams love him. You know, the Heat was offered something like 6 draft picks for him from the Celtics. I don't know if you heard that.
No.
Wow. Yes. 4 first rounders and 2, you know, second rounders from the next year or something like that, and they turned it down. So he's a beast, and they really love him. Dragic, yeah, he's 30. He's not a young player. I like him. There's a lot of sort of, you know, rumors swirling that in the postseason he didn't really perform. He was exposed a little bit defensively. I still think he brought so much to the team in terms of when he took over, when Bosch went down, and they went up-tempo, if you remember, right after the All-Star game last season.
Yep.
It was a dramatic difference. And Bosch can't play that style. Dwayne, frankly, is not that style either. And I think that's part of this, too, is when Dwayne would go in, the offense would slow down. And the Heat had made a decision, and Spoelstra, from the beginning of the year, was trying to get them to get more possessions per game. And suddenly, you know, when they had to make this shift based on Bosch, it kind of, you know, happened for them. So I love Richardson. I love Winslow. Briante Weber, I don't know much about him, but they're very high on him. I think Tyler Johnson was given this big, contract by the Nets that we have a chance to match.
Right.
But I don't think we will because there's like a poison pill. The last 2 years are like $20 million, and I'm sorry, he's not that level of player yet.
Sure.
So if we get him back, it's great. If not, I think it's probably better for the team because it limits our flexibility financially.
Man, you were right about Josh Richardson. He had 46% three-point percentage last year, which I was not aware of, which is insane. 53 of 115, that's a, you know, decent amount of attempts, and with second-round pick. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
What a return on that.
And he was a defensive player. He was a defensive player. So we
athletic
took him.
Too, right?
Yeah, very athletic, absolutely. And he's a high-energy guy. And we started him because we had to, because players went down with injuries, and because we loved his defense. And then all of a sudden, they worked with him, literally Spoelstra worked one-on-one with him on his shooting. And it just sort of clicked.
Great stuff. Finally, to wrap it up, first of all, again, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it. It's great to have you on again. I'd like to get your opinion on what they're going to do next year with that free agent class of 2017. What's the word down there? Are they going to go aggressively for the available free agents? And is there any word on who that would potentially be?
I think what they're doing, I don't know. You know, that's pure speculation. I mean, yes, they are. But I think the key to this move was flexibility. Because let's say, somebody becomes available this year, the December whatever trading window opens, right?
Yeah.
Only a few teams are going to have the flexibility. Maybe the Heat's one of them. Next year, they're going to have $50, $60 million of salary cap space. And by the way, they just revised the salary cap for next year down by $5 million. So the Heat's, whatever amount it is, $40, $50, $60 million, suddenly is worth a little bit more because it's a smaller cap in general, right? So they have the same amount.
Right.
But relative to the cap, it's a higher percentage. So that's become more valuable for the Heat. So I think also the draft next season is supposed to be amazing. I don't know. I know we have a pick in the first round. I think that's sort of a roll of the dice. But I do think that, yeah, I think the Heat are going to go for a blockbuster, you know, call it Westbrook. Curry's never going to leave. You know, maybe a Blake Griffin. Chris Paul's a little old. Dragic maybe gets traded. Maybe they, you know, maybe they put a super team together with Carmelo. I, you know, who knows? I think it's just all about sort of the new era of you know, the NBA where there's all this money and where the players want to go where other great players are playing, and they want to create these great super teams. And I think whoever has the flexibility to do that is best poised every year to, you know, to recruit these free agents. So
great point.
Yeah, they're in a good position. They're in a great position. I'll just tell you this one thing, which I just heard. One of the beat writers for the Heat texted Dwayne Wade two nights ago when it was all coming out that he was going to be leaving, and he's like, you know, Dwayne, what's the deal? Done? Or maybe he just texted the word done? Question mark. And Dwayne responded back, yeah, they didn't even fight. Which,
wow.
Yeah. So this is not such a, like, oh, we got caught off guard. This has been happening for a while. That's why I think the Chris Bosh thing played into it. Once they realize he's not coming back, Dwayne realized he's not coming back, that affects Dwayne's desire to play for the Heat as well. Let's be honest. If he wants to go and, you know, play for a better team because the other All-Star isn't going to be able to play, I understand that. So apparently they were ready for it. They're preparing for the future. This is a move about flexibility and team. And in the short term, it's painful. We love Dwayne. I hope he does incredibly well for the Bulls because, you know, I love and respect the guy.
Alex, thanks again for joining the Bullseye. I can't thank you enough. Best of luck to the Heat next year, except when you play the Bulls.
Of course.
I honestly hope. I mean, I know the Heat fans in general get a bad rap, but knowing you and meeting other people down there during my time that I spent down there, I think they got an excellent fan base down there. So, yeah.
And it's a very well-run organization. And again, I don't think there's anybody at fault. There's no winners or losers today. It's just business. We move forward. I'm excited to see what the Heat do next year. If they didn't have any young players, I'd be bummed. But yeah. So anyway, good luck, except when we play the Bulls.
All right, my friend. Talk to you soon. Thanks, guys, for coming on Chicago Bulls.
All right, Fred. You bet.
Dario, thanks again for joining the Chicago Bulls. I'm really glad to have you on. It's the first time we've really had anyone from the Golden State market on the show in all the years that we've had this show going on, almost 10 years now. So really looking forward to getting a kind of feel and your take for what's going on the ground over there. So to start out, the first question I had for you is obviously one of the biggest weeks in the history of the Golden State franchise. What was the general reaction from the fan base to the acquisition of Kevin Durant?
Yeah, it was a bit of a mixed reaction, I'd say. On the one hand, fans are just ecstatic to have a player of Durant's caliber here. I think when the chance came up to get somebody like Durant and to add him to the big three of Curry, Thompson, and Green, the fans just really saw the opportunity to do something incredible. On the other hand, the team over the last 2 years had really gelled well. The players were very popular. The style of play, where they really played together as a team, even though Curry had won the MVPs, there was still just a lot of ball sharing and a lot of just great passing and very good chemistry. So there's still some apprehension over, you know, breaking up that team and seeing just very popular players leave. The team was really well-loved, and I think that was a combination of the team for so long had not been good, and then winning the championship last year, going back to the championship game this year, you know, unfortunately losing that Game 7 after what was a great season. But overall, there's just, again, this excitement of getting somebody like Kevin Durant and just seeing, you know, the big four now and how that's going to change. It's going to be really interesting to see the dynamic here over the next year or so.
I'm curious to, you know, in essence, he's basically replacing Harrison Barnes. And I'm kind of curious to the fan base reaction to Harrison Barnes. I know he was terrible in the last three games of the finals, 5 for 32, but overall, he seemed to have a good year for the most part until the playoffs. What was the fan base reaction to that loss specifically, and what was your personal opinion of Harrison Barnes?
Yeah, you know, I liked Harrison Barnes, and it's always kind of hard to make a judgment on somebody based on just a short number of games. I don't know if something was going on. I don't know if anything had changed. He clearly got a big contract, so he's valued around the league. But I do think that even after last year's finals performance, coupled with this year's performance, that had kind of sealed his fate. Regardless of the Durant signing, I think that Barnes was on his way out. In terms of the fan reactions in general, I think, again, he was a very likable guy. People gave him a lot of credit for what he brought to the team and for what he had done during the regular season. But I have yet to come across anybody who was really sad to see him go. Again, that probably has a lot to do with the Durant signing. But again, you know, he just didn't do himself any favors during the last few finals, or the last few games of the finals, as you mentioned.
Oh, no doubt about that. How about the general reaction from the fan base to that loss? I mean, after such a fantastic season, 70, I know we had talked, you know, breaking the Bulls record and then getting all the way going up 3-1 against the Cavs and losing in such, you know, basically heartbreaking fashion when you really analyze it. What was the general reaction from the fan base? Was it shock and awe? Was it anger? What would you characterize it as?
Yeah, I think you already got the right word there. It was heartbreak more than anything else. I think that there was certainly a bit of shock and awe again, the way the team lost. But more than anything, it was heartbreak. I mean, you have to understand the Warriors were just not a good team for a lot of years. You know, you can go back to the last championship, which was in the 70s. You had Run TMC in the 90s. When you had Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin, and that team was good, but never finals worthy. They were just a fun team to watch, and that was, you know, a nice little blip where there was a few years of just great runs by the team. But other than that, it's just been a pretty pretty bad place to be a basketball fan. And just seeing how the team has evolved, again, how they played together, they're a really likable team. You know, there's not a whole lot of ego on the team. They seem like very nice people just outside of the basketball court as well. And to see them lose like that, and then to see a lot of the press conferences afterwards, like just how hard they were taking it, I think for the most part, the fans are just heartbroken more than anything else. There is just a disappointment both for themselves, disappointment that such a great regular season wasn't capped off with a win, which, you know, really takes away from that record for the regular season wins. And then there's just a whole lot of disappointment for a team that suffered so long. That back-to-back championship would have been just a nice way to kind of cap off the run that they've had over the last few years.
Yeah, I'm still shocked they lost it. I think a lot goes to Green suspension. Game 5, I blame it on Green, you know, not the NBA. They had to take action. It's just still so shocking that they lost. And in essence, though, when you look at a big picture, I think that led to Durant joining the team. Without that loss to the Cavs, I don't see how Durant could possibly leave Oklahoma City to join a team that's already won a title. There's nothing there for him to gain. In essence, now he can go there, and if they win the title, he could say it was because his, you know, he joined the team. Is a few more questions in general about the team, because I think most of the people in the Chicago area aren't aware. The stadium that they're at, such a huge advantage, Oracle Arena, and I was there a few years ago, and I was really shocked at the, you know, just the level of, I guess the word would be shocked, but I was really impressed with the level of the home court advantage that crowd brought. They are moving from there, is that correct? Could you give a little details on what's happening in this offseason and where they're going to play next year?
Yeah, so they'll still be there next year. The arena right now, they play in Oakland, right next door to the Coliseum where the Raiders and the Athletics play. In Oracle, you mentioned it's a great home field advantage. They actually gutted that arena, I think it was in the 90s, and they remodeled the inside based on the Phoenix Suns arena because that was a new arena at the time. And it had provided such a huge advantage just for the feel and for the home team that they decided to redo it. So even though the outside is still relatively old and the infrastructure is old, the inside itself is a little bit more modern. But regardless, I think just with a lot of the changes, the Giants got a new stadium in the 90s altogether in downtown San Francisco, and the Warriors, which had previously played in San Francisco decades ago, were looking to move back. There's an abandoned pier that right now is only a parking lot, and the idea is to build the arena out on the bay, very close to where the San Francisco Giants play. And if, you know, based on the concepts, it's a gorgeous arena, a lot of glass, whereas as somebody attending a game, you can see the entire bay. You can see the Bay Bridge, Oakland, all the way down to San Jose and then back into San Francisco itself. So there's always a lot of approvals that are needed to get something like that up and running. But I do believe that it is moving forward. Construction wouldn't break until next year. So my guess is this would be a 2018-19 season is probably the earliest that they would play there, but that is the current goal at the moment.
I'd like to take a step back, too, and look in retrospect to a few years. I mean, now it's almost amazing to think, but the Warriors are pretty much a first-round exit for a long time, or even, barely a playoff team.
If they even made it, yeah.
Exactly. And Mark Jackson comes, the team improves, and he gets fired after, I think they lost in seven games. I don't recall the actual details. I know it was a hard-fought series. And, you know, obviously they move on to Steve Kerr, but now it looked like a great move. But at the time, could you maybe step back, and did you recall your feelings at the time, the fan base feelings at the time? Was that move generally approved, or was it frowned upon in the hiring of Steve Kerr, et cetera? I'd like to get your take on that period in Warriors history.
Yeah, well, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, it was a brilliant move. That's what I thought at the moment as well. But all jokes aside.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Jackson, he was a popular coach. At the time of the change, I thought it was crazy, quite frankly. But then shortly after the change, it came out that there was just a lot of tension with the rest of the coaching staff, with the players. So it did seem like one of those things that even though on the surface everything looked good, there was just a firestorm brewing that was just waiting to happen. So with that, as those stories came out, it was clear that something needed to change. And again, I figure the people who are most closely associated with that are going to make the right move. And I think it really just came down to personalities. There was just a lot of tension. And even there, some assistant coaches had quit or been fired. There was just going to be a lot of turmoil. In terms of Steve Kerr itself, that was more what I was worried about, because I think at the time he was like a TNT analyst, and I was like, oh my God, they're bringing in a TV analyst. This is going to be awful. But then as I started hearing what he had to say, you know, before we got into the season itself, I felt really good about it. And then quickly, you know, just seeing the players' reactions to Kerr and what they were saying about him, that first month of the season last year, just felt really good about him being here. And, you know, ultimately the results speak for themselves here as well.
Absolutely. So going into the next season, obviously the Warriors are probably going to be favored. Are there any teams that you thought, wow, this team could be a potential problem? I know the Spurs are the obvious one, but are you pretty confident this is going to be a title? Obviously avoiding any major injuries. What's the confidence level for you guys going into next year?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to be overconfident, especially given how the series went this year. I think that the Warriors have a fantastic chance at to just being very highly seeded in the playoffs, which should give them a path to that final. And I think that they, even if there's injuries, even if there's things like that, they will have a fighting chance all the way to the end. I wouldn't say that there's confidence that they will win, but there's certainly confidence that they can compete at every stage all the way to the title. So I feel really good about that. And more importantly, I feel really good that they're going to be a fun team to watch, and it's just going to be a great team for the entire year to follow.
Dario, can't thank you enough for joining Chicago Bulls. I answered a lot of questions I'm sure the fans had in regards to the Golden State Warriors. It's really a team that I feel could probably win three or four of the next titles, barring any major injuries. Even I think they could even afford one injury and they'd still be the favorites. One more question I did neglect to ask. Out of the losses that you have suffered, obviously the departure of Bogut, departure of Barnes, I think there's a couple other players that are going to be leaving the team. Which one do you feel will be the most, impactful, have the most, the highest negative impact in his or his departure?
That's a good question, because I think if you're going to take it without the new the new people who have joined the team, I'm probably going to go with Bogut, because you saw in that final against Cleveland, once Bogut was out, it really changed the dynamic of what the team was able to accomplish. Now, we've brought in West. There's a couple of other people coming in at center who will see if they are able to fill the void. But Bogut, at least on my end, was kind of an underappreciated player. I didn't realize how integral he was to what the Warriors needed on defense, and we just saw those in the last few games of that series. So that's going to be the key for me. I know Durant will be able to fit in from just a personality standpoint, from a team standpoint. I feel highly confident he's going to get along with the other players, and they're going to find a way to work together. But bringing in the new guys at center to replace Bogut, that's going to be the big question mark for me, because ultimately when that broke down, the Warriors' game plan broke down. So I'll be keeping my eyes open for that one.
Yeah, Zaza Pachulia is out on a bargain contract. Is a pretty good stopgap, measure for them, I really felt. So it's just amazing what an organization this has become, just the Leviathan of talent. And my hope, honestly, is that they sweep the Cavs in four, because I think the only chance LeBron will have, he'll be faced with a decision whether or not to, join Wade and maybe, Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler in Chicago next season, after next season. That may be his only chance at, building a team that's good enough to beat the Golden State Warriors, because four all-stars of a quality, Durant, a Thompson, a Curry and a Green, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen anytime soon that team's going to be beatable, just in my opinion. So really enjoyed it. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Don't underestimate LeBron. That's all I would say. You never know what he can accomplish. He's carried teams with far less talent to some pretty deep runs. So I would not underestimate what he can do next year. Even if it is the Cavs and Warriors, I don't see the Cavs getting swept, not as long as LeBron's there.
Interesting. Yeah, well, it will definitely be an accomplishment of epic proportions if he was able to beat this Warriors team. That's all I'm
going
to say. So
if there's somebody who can do it, it's him. Yeah.
It'll be great to see. All right, Darryl, man, thanks again for joining Chicago Bullseye. Just an FYI, this will be up over the weekend. I'm going to cut it and post it. So really enjoyed your participation and your knowledge, and look to hopefully have you on again soon.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.